Chapter 18.
Ulanor, Gorkhagrod throne room. They had been wrong. So wrong. Corlan saw that now. He looked to the circular dais in the centre of the throne room and its six thrones. Six. He looked to the galleries and again, six unique identifiers that marked them apart. Illogical extrapolations ran through his mind as though the gates between what could and what could not be had been lifted. This was not like the Orc empires of the past, not even the last true war of Urlak Urg, carried by the iron rule of its single omnipotent emperor figure. There was not one beast, and there had never been. There were six, prime orcs, each a father to one legion within the whole. From his position, where the defeated orc had thrown him, some way around the circumference of the throne room from the slave's entrance by which they had entered, Corlan could see the throne that had previously been hidden. It was larger than the others. It was covered with skins and furs, and adorned with black and white checks. As Corlan beheld it, struck by the familiarity of that particular pattern of black and white, the grinding clank of moving armour reached a crescendo, and a second beast passed through the massive main doors. A second prime orc. Or was it the first? It was greater in stature than the orc Corlan had just fought, and encased in armour that was both heavier and more splendid, intricately wrought plates adorned with those black and white jags. A helm with a tusked face, made a gory red with encrusted stones, enclosed its head. It looked over the ruined gargants to either side of the gate, the hundreds of messily slain orcs around the throne room, and emitted a rumbling growl like the warhorn of a titan. Its gaze set upon the fallen prime orc, and it started forwards. Corland felt the ground shake. The air around the brute whined as its gauntlets burst into writhing green flame. This was the orc that had fought Vulcan. Corland cursed himself for not seeing it, but then why should he? How could he have reasoned that there could have been more than one beast? The how of it did not matter. He was an imperial fist. He should have considered everything.
"Defend your lord, commander!"
Beaumont roared, and Kill Team Stalker opened fire at the same instant, shooting from the chest as they moved at a steady walk to intercept. Bolt rounds scattered off the prime orc's shields. Melter beams and plasma bolts from combi attachments sizzled across them. Cavalinera and her three sisters that remained able swiftly overtook Beaumont's thumping progress. Olug and Brock bellowed not far behind. The women flowed across the Ogryns and each other, crimson and black like streams of coloured plasma under the fluctuating control of a multivariate magnetic field. But the prime orc ignored their power blades as though they were insect stings. Olug barreled into the great orc's chest and bounced off. The prime orc simply walked through him, breaking the Ogryn's hip under its boot, then swatted Brock contemptuously aside on the edge of its gauntlet. Cavalinera continued to harry. With a growl, the prime orc drew its gauntlets apart, the fires burning white, green, and high, and then thumped them together. There was an implosive clap, and a wave of force washed out and knocked the lightly armoured sisters down. Corland heard the change in the thunder of bolter fire. It was missing, cracking along the wall above Corland's head. He saw one strike a bracket. The metal plate flew out, and the stanchion buckled, the last holding up the gallery. The whole structure fell away from the wall with a crunch of broken stone. Beaumont drew sharply up, Asger too converging from another angle. The prime orc looked up, and the dropped gallery cracked in half over its helmet. Its force field flashed out with a burned stink of ozone, and it sank under several tons of rock and iron and greenskin dead. Corlan saw the veiled threat of a humanoid shape sprint up one half of the gallery floor and vault up to the prime orc's shoulder. Cruel. Corlan's auto-senses were dead, and if they had been unable to track the assassin before, then his eyes had no chance now. Cruel appeared to have a sword in his hand, a long blade that phased in and out of material reality. With silent efficiency, the assassin buried the weapon in the prime orc's neck. The phase blade passed through the prime orc's armour as though it just wasn't there, but either lacked the length to do the same to the greenskin's throat or found its flesh a tougher prospect. The Primarch began to rise, rubble tipping from its shoulders in almighty crashes. It was coated with powder. Bolt rounds from the kill team spanked off its unshielded armor. A vicious twist of the neck sent Krul flying. The assassin twisted like an aerial gyro, landed in a roll, drew his executioner pistol, and squeezed off bolt rounds even as he spun. Their effect was no different to those of the Death Watch. It was impervious, imperious, and it continued towards Courland and its beaten brother like an armored locomotive.
"Whither before the Emperor's light, abhorrent?" cried Beaumont.
His ponderous stride bore him into the Primarch's path. Tactical dreadnought armor weighed several tons. The vectoral force of a charging space marine Terminator was equivalent to being struck by a moving tank. But the Primarch shunted him aside as though the battle plate was a hollow practice cast. Asger Warfist slashed across the back of the Primarch's legs with similar luck. An upclip of the giant's spiked heel left the Wolflord on his back. The last of the Imperial fists squared himself defiantly. One leg was fully armored, the other just a knee joint and a boot with some fluid hydraulic wiring connecting the two to his hip. His torso was a patchwork of missing plates, and his gorget ring mangled into a grimace of tortured adamantium. His gun was gone, the arm that would have wielded it useless anyway.
"Daylight Wall stands forever."
He lunged for the Primarch's groin with his sword. The disruption field was stuttering, caused by power outages from near-continuous use, but come the final reckoning, that did not matter. The Primarch took the blow, blade on, to its gauntlet palm, and trapped it. The monster yanked the relic blade from Kurin's grip with a strength that was simply irresistible, and then, holding it by the blade, struck the grip across its thigh plate. The metal shattered into a dozen pieces. With a grunt of satisfaction, it cast the last piece aside, planted its boot heel into Kurin's chest, and shoved him to the floor. It ground its boot in. Kurin's solid rib plate cracked under the weight, his vision turned spotty and black, but his hearing remained sharp. Its voice was like death from orbit.
"I am Slaughter."
After murdering a path through several flights of stairs to reach the broad stone block corridor, Kjarvik's Voxlink with Kill Team Stalker came back. They were close. He knew that because contact with Claremont, the fleet, or with Thane was still out. At first, his snarled demands for an update were looped back in a growl of static-chopped voices, then buzzarding cries, barely human in their grief or their anger, or both. The second thing Kjarvik knew was that they had failed. The reasons for that were obvious. Orcs of an especially large breed blocked Umbra's run on the vast arched gateway at the end of the corridor. They were bulked out in black and white megaplate, appropriately armed for urban combat with powered battle saws, flamers, and high-volume stubbers. Under other circumstances, Kjarvik might have doubted his ability to break through such heavy brutes in such numbers. But for once, the Luck Spinners spared the Stormcrow a rare smile. The orcs had been marching on the gate themselves, too hemmed in now to properly turn and fight the force that struck at their backs. A blow from Kjarvik's power fist obliterated a mega-armored boss from waist to neck. A full magazine of vengeance rounds slowed down another. Blood matted his beard. His braids stuck to his head. Zariel's eviscerator was a near-constant meat shriek, white noise above the grunts and the howls and the thunder of heavy firepower. Baldurich's sword made ribboning flurries of gore. Boar murdered orcs by the dozen with plasma and flame. Farius's shield was slick, his bolter still firing. The iron snake advanced in a crouch. Aetherius walking behind and blazing over his head with bolter and servo harness. The weapon's flashes caused the brilliant purple and gold of his pauldron plate to shine. The inquisitorial stormtroopers made their contribution, pinpoint flurries of las hosing the inevitable gaps that Baldurich and Zariel's savagery left behind. Raznik came just behind them, shielding Inquisitor Venand with his body, whatever neuro-enhancements he had been given, allowing him to fire his brace of pistols entirely independently and with astonishing accuracy. What all of that splendid slaughter told Kjarvik was that they had failed. The Psyker bomb had not worked.
The howl he gave was that of a wolf for its master, and burned his throat like a jaw full of winter. He was unsurprised to hear the cries of lamentation from those around him.
"Push through to the throne room,"
urged Venand, covering her Voxspeed with one hand whilst shooting with her las pistol.
"Something has gone wrong. I have to see."
Gjarvik did not need to see. He could already smell the red snow. With a frenzied gargle, Zariel tore out an orc's throat with his bare teeth, dissolved the face of another with a gob of Betcher's acid, and kicked himself a path to the gate. It was 30 meters high, as dense with imagery as any cave wall on Fenris, but the flesh-tearer's wrath cowed its grandeur. It was what lay beyond that put fire under them all. Gjarvik rushed in behind with a howl, the rest of Kill Team Umbra at his back, ready to administer the duty for which Courland had brought them together. They brought death to the alien. Once before, Laurentius had witnessed the end of the Imperial Fists. It seemed horribly fitting that he should bear witness again. He was aware of the Death Watch and Inquisitorial Stormtroopers that came in, firing through the main doors. He was aware of the Beast, and it was the Beast, he had no doubt. The titanic orc withdrew its foot from Corlin's chest, and then, with a rumble of mockery booming from the hollow spaces of its visor, it reached up to unhook its helmet from its gorget. Its flesh was a blackish green, crusted like scar tissue or lignified plant matter. The look it gave Courland was at once contemptuous and triumphant. Helmet held under arm, it gave the remaining Space Marines and their efforts a derisive look. It turned and walked away with a sneer. Once more, mankind handed up its best, and again the caprice of the gods had accepted that sacrifice and repaid it in blood. Asgir Warfist howled after it in futility as the Beast waded back into its bodyguard. The Space Wolf led Kill Team Stalker and the Sisters of Silence into the attack, Kill Team Umbra falling on the assaulting mob from the rear. Laurentius was aware of the battle, retribution so savage and total that even in the narrowband focus of grief, Laurentius could not have missed it entirely. His eye was blinkered with sorrowful code. His ears carried the nothing whistle of a fluid pump that did not beat. His small mechanical body was numb in a way that went beyond what its makers had intended. Glory to the Omnisire! He was aware of Beaumont on his knees and weeping unashamedly over Corlin's broken body. In a way that only one whose sensory apparatus was removed from their largely organic brain could experience, Laurentius was aware of it all. It took place in another reality, a new sphere of data irrelevancy in which he had no interest and had lost the rights to access. All that felt real at that moment lay within the ruin of human flesh and golden yellow ceramite draped through Beaumont's arms. Courland had not just been humanity's great symbol of hope. He had been Laurentius's friend. "He needs an apothecary," said Beaumont. The Black Templar wasn't really looking at Laurentius at all. Much like himself, the Space Marine existed in his pocket space of grief. Behind them, a battle raged. They were both aware of it.
"There is none," said Laurentius.
He knew more about Space Marine biology than most non-Space Marines could profess. He could pinpoint the secondary heart, the oolitic kidney, the pre-stomach. He knew enough to ask the right questions, not enough to help his friend in any way. Trying not to think too much about what he did, he prodded Corlin's purpled throat with a digital manipulator. Sensory feedback flowed back through its synthetic axon fibers. Fluid oedema, Larriman coagulation, crushed cartilage, like scrunching one's finger through packing plastic. The incongruous likeness made him squirm, and he withdrew the appendage. The Prime Orc had known exactly what had to be destroyed to eliminate the one thing its rival could not afford to lose.
I think that...
No, said Beaumont.
No, I will not accept it. The Line of Dawn must live on.
Laurentius deployed his extensors for a second examination, this time preparing a full suite of electroprobes and echo feelers. More out of due diligence than hope. As he extended his tools, a terrific explosion shook the ceiling, ferocious enough to force him to notice it. He rolled his eyeball up and saw light.
The ceiling was cracked. A second detonation blew a hole in it and brought a cataract of frescoed rubble pieces the size of battle tanks crashing down. Immediately under the downfall, the great dais of the six Primarchs was crushed. Spotlights swiped the throne room's scarred mosaic, followed by the thunderous reports of heavy bolters and the empty prang of return fire from the ground. The signature circular roar of turbofan engines angled for vertical lift. An intense beam shone in Laurentius's eye as it tracked. He blinked, but in the split second before, he saw a pair of Deathwatch black Thunderhawk gunships descending through the breached ceiling. They spat fire. Heavy bolters, las cannons, too tight for missiles. Lord Thane stood on the assault ramp, waving the embattled stormtroopers and Deathwatch aboard. With no one else of a mind to step into Corlan's still warm boots, Inquisitor Venand gave the order to retreat. Laurentius was aware of it, barely, but only when Asger Warfist lifted him up under one arm and Beaumont reverently kissed Corlan's body did he pay it any mind. They had lost. The last Son of Dawn was dead.